Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. I will be reading the article Trivium in Reality, Language and Reality Part 1. The four other parts are likely to follow after this one. So I will begin. Why does the Trivium method matter? Learning about how we learn and how we think allows us to improve our ways of thinking and therefore learning as well. The content is 1.1 Trivium in Reality and 1.2 Grammar and Logic in Reality. 1.1 Trivium in Reality. The Trivium consists of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, the first three of the seven liberal arts. The Trivium is the art and science of the mind consciousness, a method to train the mind to learn and think more correctly. The Quadrivium consists of arithmetic, geometry, musical theory, and astronomy, the latter four parts of the seven liberal arts. The Quadrivium is the art and science of matter, and by extension, measurement. Our minds and the matter around us are the realities we exist in. One formulates a subjective map, and the other is the objective territory. The Trivium method is to help us discover specific and universal truths about the universe and ourselves. Learning about the Trivium refines and enhances our innate methodology for living, of input, processing, and output, or knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. The development of the liberal arts is to gain the competency to explore reality for ourselves and free our minds from ignorance through the understanding of reality. So I have an infographic on particulars, universals, grouping, and symmetry order, relating trees as particulars and forests as universals, going from the lower order particulars to the universal higher order, which is a more specific lower order view of individual pieces and details, abstracting towards universals from those particulars towards a higher order, more general view, bigger picture. This relates to grouping and symmetry order, as the particulars are the syntropy, the grouping and diversity of many relative interpositions, and the forest universal is the symmetry order, which is related to entropy and stagnation and uniformity, where everything is one unified conformity of relation and there's not really any existence. And we can see how the existence is represented through particulars, and the universals aren't the actual concretes in existence, they're the hidden inside the existence of things in concrete reality, such as the essence, the form, and the identity. Those things are within the things that actually exist in our reality. So we can see the trees in the relative position of grouping order of existence, then larger connected view of forest, where it looks all the same, like the quantum symmetry non-existence. So this, I could go into more detail into this explanation, but you can go look into it more, look into symmetry and entropy, which is related to grouping. Look into syntropy, which is related to grouping, and look into entropy, which is related to symmetry order. And you can look into David Bohm, which was a pupil of Einstein, and he went into all this stuff, and he was a quantum physicist. I don't agree with everything, all the conclusions they come up with, but there's a lot of useful information nonetheless. I will continue reading from the article. The map we can detail well, like the focused perspective on the trees and particulars we can get a closer look at. The territory, however, the bigger, wider picture, consists of hidden aspects of reality that can be difficult to detect or discover, but can be arrived at in time with thought and percepts of the senses. The undetectable aspects are extended through technology to permit the senses to perceive them and discover. There are events and sub-processes that occur outside our sense perception, but those that are relevant to our well-being are comprehensible with our direct sense perception of reality and contemplation in thought. The map we create is a particular perspective of the objective territory of reality. We can see all the details we have in the map, but we can't see all the details in the territory, as there are many aspects that are hidden to us. We can progressively discover some parts of the vast array of hidden components that are part of the universe. Many of these have been discovered in the scientific technological pursuit, such as gravity. The important hidden and unseen laws can be known, and they do not require technology. The most important one would be the natural moral laws regarding the consequences to our behaviors. The trivium method is an efficient way to model or map the territory of reality. It's not 100% effective, as nothing is. The use of the tool will improve as the user learns to master it. I have found the trivium is a methodology that mirrors the intuitive natural process of conceiving, understanding, and navigating reality. Understanding the methodology more clearly brings one to understand how we function internally as a unity of consciousness as well, in addition to understanding reality more capably. So I have an infographic called Trivium Pivot Point of Equilibrium or Balance. This is a scale which has consciousness, so the mind, as we talked about earlier in the article, and existence, reality. So perception, conception, consciousness needs to be balanced with reality and existence. This is the equilibrium. So we have to align our perceptions, conceptions with reality and truth. We synchronize our interaction, we synchronize with the interaction point, the trivium method. More specifically within the trivium method, also in the center of the trivium method is logic, which we'll get more into as to the supreme importance of the trivium method is within logic. So consciousness, perception, conception is the subjective. It's epistemology in the study, and it's the mind map. So when we're talking about the map in the territory, the map is the subjective mind, consciousness, perceptions, and the territory is actually the matter, the objective metaphysical existence of reality. But we gotta align them. Reality always is reality, but our problem is we're not always seeing reality as it is. We have to align ourselves, our consciousness, our mind, our subjective multiverse, parallel universe reality we have inside, and we have to make it that which is the objective reality. We can't just live in a fantasy reality inside of our minds. The functionality of the trivium method, natural law expressions, and alchemy is to better understand how behavior, life, and reality function. All these tools are part of life, but we don't know them by these names and don't understand the depth and clarity of the processes at work within and without us. If we choose to learn about reality and ourselves, we can learn about how to live a proper life without creating evil. These tools of better living, natural law, trivium, and alchemy, are part of life for human consciousness. They are automatic processes that we intuitively develop as part of existing as higher order consciousness beings. I learned the trivium actively by learning logic more, but earlier learned grammar, not through theory and proper language arts courses, but intuitively through reading books. These faculties of grammar, logic, and rhetoric are a natural part of learning about reality and communicating about it to others. To learn about it more in depth enhances and further develops the ability to understand reality and express it to others. When you learn a language and how it works and use it, you learn the inherent principles of its syntax and special grammar intuitively, and also of the general grammar of language reflecting reality. If you take the time to learn it logically, learn its structure and components in conscious awareness, then you can expand your power of how the language is created and arranged to convey meaning. I learned how to use language intuitively and have made my work from this learning. I didn't know what a predicate was or other terms, but it didn't prevent me from putting out material of logical consistency. Now I understand the power of language more, but it doesn't change my use of the language that I have already been using, as logic, non-contradiction, structured my understanding. For example, knowing a list of fallacies won't help you much. You probably won't really understand or even know how to apply them properly. I have had this done to me. It is amusing in a way to see how people think they understand a particular fallacy or even how something is a fallacy. I have learned how to think and can spot irrational errors in reasoning, even if I don't know the name of a fallacy or its particular pattern. Errors in thought are detectable once you know how to think properly. Certain patterns of error can be detected and labeled, as was done with the fallacies. They're just names, symbolic labels for specific problems in processing and thought. And that's why they're called fallacies. So you can learn about them, but if you know how to think, you can already detect how people are failing to think properly. So if you know the name and you know how the mechanism works, it's more helpful. Yes, it'll facilitate and provide a common base understanding for people to understand the errors in reasoning. But you don't need those specific labels. You can detect how people think incorrectly because you are able to think correctly. The trivium method is a process of conscious awareness, that is to say, thought, that is inherent in our pattern recognition of reality. This is what I say about learning the trivium myself without knowing it was the trivium, learning how to think myself, learning to contemplate, reflect, etc. We use trivium methodologies, true meditation, reflection, contemplation, and alchemy all the time, but those of us who actively and consciously choose to work on and develop those tools will grow and better ourselves if we keep at it, keep walking the path and way to truth and morality. Alchemy, trivium, natural law, and developed thought, contemplation, reflection, which is true meditation, not the altered form, are the methods to cultivate true intelligence and consciousness. I just want to mention that my article has many words and sentences with hyperlinks to previous work I've done. So if you want to learn more about what I'm talking about, please go read the article. It'll provide additional resources. And there's a related section at the bottom of the article which provides additional resources into the fundamentals of reality, such as axioms, consciousness and existence, and words and proportions in reality, how we trace reality, etymological work dealing with that. Back to the article. It is automatic to use language once we learn it. It becomes a part of us. Think of how amazing it is, all of these words, their sequences, their meaning, and we do it automatically for the most part. Little conscious requirement is made to reference reality with a particular symbol once we learn it. It is instantaneous. Then we recall the information for that symbol, then organize it all. What we learn often easily becomes part of how we live. The influence of what we take in can have great effect on us. That's why grammar, what we take in, we gotta go for quality and not for garbage, because it has a great impact on how we live. It easily becomes a part of us and how we think of reality and ourselves. Knowledge and information is powerful. Even when you don't know how to think, it'll change the way you think without you even knowing. That's mind control. The trivium is meant to develop clear and deliberate thought through life. Free your mind, do away with falsity, and learn how to think. Oh, learn how to learn and learn how to think. Grammar, logic, and rhetoric are terms for natural processes used to discover, navigate, and reference reality. We gather data about reality, which is the input, grammar, and induction. Then we filter through the collected information for valid data that brings clarity and greater understanding with the deduction and subtraction of material that is not valid. The foundation for our conception of reality comes from the construction of general grammar, as it is word symbols that form the language used to think and communicate. Living under natural moral law and understanding reality are linked. Before knowledge of natural law can be properly understood, the faculties in consciousness to perceive and process reality accurately must be developed. Otherwise, a limited depth of comprehension is reached due to limited reference to reality, to the reality, to develop understanding. I'm just going to reread that sentence. Otherwise, a limited depth of comprehension is reached due to limited reference to the reality to develop understanding. With these tools of learning developed more, natural law becomes more easily visible and correctly discernible. Without these tools developed enough, we only have the basics of understanding and navigating reality, and as such, the ability to recognize natural moral law is often clouded. To understand natural law properly, an understanding of the foundation for how we communicate and represent reality to each other and ourselves needs to be developed. This foundation is language, as language, symbol, is the means through which we express our understanding of reality. The more we can express reality through language, the more we will understand reality. The trivium is an effective mechanism for understanding language and reality more deeply. If you want to understand reality more, then develop the use of the tools used to understand and navigate reality. Language is created to describe reality. Learn about language and words to understand more about the way we represent reality. And also if the symbols we use actually conform to reality, or if we are being deceived through word alterations and fallacious reasoning. So this will be covered in the future more with etymology. So that's where we find out whether we're being tricked, whether the original meaning that's been imbued in a symbol is still there, or if it's been altered. Section 1.2, Grammar and Logic in Reality. So the first infographic here is the induction-deduction logic spiral. It's also the grammar logic spiral. We go from reality to truth. That's our goal. So reality, that's where the data input is, the grammar input. That's where the smaller particulars are. And we can go up and down as a spiral from grammar to logic, from the data input to the processing, from the smaller particulars to the larger universals. So once we get up to the top, but we have our larger universal, but we still need to verify it because it might be a false generalized understanding. So on the left, when we have the induction, when we're creating those larger universals from our grammar data input, from the smaller particulars, we go up. And then we also need to verify that understanding. And this all happens intuitively for the most part. We think of an idea, and then we verify it, and then we think more, we alter our conception, then we deduce and verify it some more, we process it some more, so it goes up and down, up and down, up and down, from reality to truth, which is what we're trying to obtain through logic, which is the aim of logic, truth. So we're going from reality, grammar data input, to logic processing in order to find truth. When we find through verification of concepts, non-contradiction, consistency. If we find a contradiction, an inconsistency, we keep going back down the spiral to data input to get more data so we can create a better, more refined conception. And we induct back and we deduct back down to reality, induct back up to truth. And we're always trying to find the truth and refine the truth. And that's what logic and non-contradiction is about. So that pretty much explains that infographic. The feedback between thought and emotion is akin to feedback between inductive and deductive reasoning logic. Grammar of initial thinking is inductive and intuitive, while derivation inference logic is deductive and possibly of a higher order. We abstract commonalities as possible universal truth and verify if indeed they are true or not by looking closer at the differences and again at more commonalities and so on. Emotions feed back with thought, just as logic feeds back with grammar, and eventually they generate enough care to will ourselves into the motivation to act. Induction cannot be separated from deduction in real life, as they both help us understand reality and are a part of living and making decisions. Logic is the art of valid inference. Inference is a thought process itself, but we seek valid thought. The study of the syllogism, deduction, is where we start to order our mind to tend to not accept contradictions, to be able to recognize contradictions as fallacies. Example, there is an event that is induced into your experience. You identify a problem with the event through deductive inference to form the solution you use, induction. Your solution can be deduced by someone else to determine its validity. Deductions refine approximations to get closer to a detailed clarity and precision. You can deduce it yourself, or you can just come up with a half-assed inductive idea, a concept, and give it to someone else and they can hash it out and remove the contradictions. But this is a process we're supposed to be doing ourselves all the time, whenever we think. This is supposed to happen all the time, intuitively, innately, just like breathing. It should hardly be a force. Well, it is a volitional, it's completely volitional, it's not automatic. But when you develop it and use it like muscles, it becomes, the basics become an automatic part. And then when the basics of induction and deduction, you can go more into it in conscious awareness rather than into the pre-programmed subconscious mechanisms you've developed through using induction and deduction. You can use more induction and more deduction through your conscious awareness, even though these processes are part of our innate capability of processing and understanding reality. We can use them more, with more power, with more precision, through our conscious awareness and developing these capacities. We can build a reality in our mind, an inner subjective multiverse running in parallel to the objective universe, from symbols or language, and in this way, a false reality can be created to act as an invisible prison and enslave our minds and the bodies that follow under them. Defining reality through symbols allows for understanding reality through a reference in consciousness. If people have different definitions for a symbol, they will be unable to communicate. Without definition, there is no separate identity and no logic, and nothing is being talked about because everything would be one thing. Semantic arguments arise when misunderstanding in terms, definitions, are used that create divergent pathways in the road of communication and understanding. The only way two people can go along the same path, to be on the same page, on the same level, is to have the same terms defined. Otherwise, misunderstanding develops. As our understanding of reality diverges from what reality is, we can end up living in subjective, altered realities that are not accurate representations of the world we live in. No one needs to learn the structure of grammar explicitly in order to speak and communicate. They don't need to learn logic explicitly either, at least for the basics to get around and survive. But logic is more complex than most people can intuitively develop because they do not spend much time thinking and developing thought on their own. Grammar involves logic, in inductive logic, which is intuitive in nature, trying to find the universal similar or dissimilar things. Logic is an underlying law in creation, in reality. In order for grammar to exist, logic is an inherent part. When you learn to reference reality to symbols, such as language, you can then communicate aspects of reality to others. All you need to understand is the relation of words to reality. You will use grammar without knowing it, and you will use logic without knowing it. These are parts of the basics for living and interaction with other beings. For the grammar to exist, logic had to exist. The law of logic and identity was established before components existed in creation to be formed into non-contradictory parts. Logic, logos, is an inherent part of reality, a law that underlies all creation. To represent reality, the principle of non-contradiction of identity is applied in all aspects of existence, including communication. Everything is what it is and is not another. This is diversity, multiplicity, and variability. To create a grammar of sounds, to create a grammar of sound symbols, logic is already underlying it through logic is already underlying it all through the reality that is referenced in the symbol that you want to create through grammar. All of the logical organization, non-contradiction, identity of reality is the grammar objects, symbols of the world that inherently have definition, meaning, regardless of our ability to describe it, which our own use of logic will help us uncover. The better we get at using logic, the more accurately we will be at, the better we get at using logic, the more accurately we will be able to discern reality from unreality, actual truth from possible belief. Then you can establish firm foundations that separate the truth based on facts from what is probable and possible as belief, but not yet known to be true or false. And I have a infographic perception versus reality. And this infographic is a flowchart on how we go from data input. And we have cognitive dissonance and how we go from either cognitive dissonance or we determine whether something is possible, probable, unlikely, or actual. Here I have another infographic. This is from a previous post I did on senses, and has to do with correspondence of information. So there's a little infographic with our awareness, and then we have our awareness of data, info, and reality, and then we have the data itself, the info and knowledge of reality. So without correspondence, these are isolated packets, lacks the correspondence, and it's a limitation in scope of applicability. When you connect those individual circles, those individual pieces of data, and you provide correspondence, you increase definition, you increase detail, you increase clarity. There's more understanding that results, and there's less limitation. So this is why people make erroneous conclusions. They have limited conceptions that limit their understanding of possibilities. They don't understand reality as fully as they can. So when you get more data and you develop correspondences between the data, it strengthens your understanding of reality. Understanding reality is the process of identity, definition, and meaning in reality. Our consciousness is made to recognize pattern and meaning, which is part of correspondence. Developing our capacity to use what is referred to as grammar and logic will help us to understand reality in greater degrees of accuracy. Grammar and logic underlie our conceptual framework for imagination and perception of what is. Sorcerers, the dark occultists, cast spells using the science and art of magical imagery to influence our minds towards falsity. They manipulate our perceptions, conceptions of reality through words and symbols we use to communicate about reality. The words that are fed to us represent our understanding of reality and the ability to reference it. If you manipulate the words people use to construct their understanding of reality, you can manipulate them in that construct of reality they believe in. If you limit the words people have to describe reality, you have the same effect upon them. This is mind control. This is the foundation of magic as I see it. The science of imagery and the mind, casting spells on the mind of people with word symbols, word magic, to create a reality in their mind, a false map that misrepresents the territory. When you get people to buy into your version of reality, you can modify their behavior to conform to this model of reality. And this is the manifestation of the spell from one mind to another and into reality itself through the actions people engage in. We all learn words inductively, intuitively, and know when and where to use them appropriately in the future through the pattern recognition of past word communications. I developed an elaborate vocabulary in high school because I read more than my friends. I could use words in the right context, although it would be hard for me to define those words as I never learned their exact definition. I only learned what they meant inductively and intuitively through reference to reality in the context of what I read. The context the word was surrounded by provided the meaning in this automatic, intuitive learning of language that I went through. This is how we learn, sorry, this is how we all learn about references in reality through symbols in language. We are mostly intuitively learning definitions as words are used to reflect reality in our communication and thought. If we look into their true meaning, we can better understand the words that are being used, if others use them correctly, rather than try to intuit and interpret the symbol's meaning as per the context of the person using it. So normally we don't look into the meaning. We just intuitively understand how words are used and then we use them in the future in sentences. But sometimes people don't know the words and how to use them in the sentences because they didn't understand the context the word was used from. And anyways, we're not looking into definitions and into what words really mean. So we're just using the words as they're projected onto us and imposed in meaning. And then we just keep using that meaning without actually knowing if it's the proper meaning. Because we just accept what we're told, like in the Truman Show. Existing things are aspects of being and they stand out in reality. These are substances, actions, attributes, and relationships that mirror the grammatical nouns, verbs, adjective, adverb, and prepositional phrases. General grammar refers to the way you think, the organization of symbols to make sense of reality, the way of initially ordering multiple thoughts. Secondary components to general grammar act as glue for the primary components mentioned above that represent existence in reality. The secondary glues are modifiers, prepositions, conjunctions, interjections, and articles that are used to connect existing things in reality. So a, the, at, these are the things that connect the actual things that exist, which are the verbs, adjective, adverb, prepositional phrases. Grammar represents the building blocks for thought. A sentence is a subject and a predicate. Something spoken about, which is the subject, and what is said of the thing spoken about, which is the predicate. Two thoughts form a sentence. Multiple thoughts form writings, essays, etc. Grammar is the automatic way consciousness first interacts with the environment by receiving input. A subject and the predicate that says something about the subject are the first symbolic representations of thought and meaning. We have something, and then the something that says something about the first something. Data about something can define the one, acting or relating subject, the nouns, the modifiers, the two, actions or relations, which are the verbs, propositions, and modifiers, and three, the object being acted upon or related to. Grammar is the inductive process of identifying and gathering data of a similar nature, kind, or class. This data is converted into correspondences to produce knowledge about a particular subject of reality. The senses provide us with the data, but we need to make sense of it all. Similarly to how we gather data on particulars in reality to uncover the similar nature and universals behind things, there are unique and singular moments and events, which are particulars, but their type, kind, class, genera, and universal is not unique and singular, as the type has been particularized previously. That's why universals can be reused, because the particular part has been previously used, so the universal is not unique and singular. We can keep getting reused, and that's how the universals and particulars relate to reality in this little way. The universal gets reused again and again into unique experiences of that type. So that's why the particulars reference specific types. The essences are always the same in the particulars because they all share that common universal that gets reused again and again into manifestation of particular concrete objects in reality. There are repeating aspects to reality and repeated behavior, and thus repeated history. We can learn from our mistakes and preserve this knowledge not only in our own memory, but in symbolic data representation in the physical world for others to learn from as well. which are books, liber, libre, liberty. So again, we understand how books, learning, knowledge, the storing of knowledge, memory, preservation of knowledge is liberty and freedom. That is how we will free our minds. And other mediums of preserving knowledge, not only books, there's other mediums. Knowledge and its preservation inside and outside of memory to not repeat the same behavioral errors is what will free us from repetitive cycles of self-imposed suffering and enslavement. This and other knowledge is acquired through thought. So that was the first part of the five-part series on language and reality, which came before the big presentation on metaphysics, language, and reality as the fundamentals of the trivium. So thought is very important. That's what the whole point of this, of the trivium is to develop proper thinking, to learn how to learn and how to think. At the bottom of this article, there's related work, which I would say is very important, specifically words, reality, and proportions, time, freedom, and thought, senses for input of reality, not technology, tracing reality, the visionary quest of wisdom, axioms, existence, consciousness, and identity. So those first five articles are very important to read, I would say, and to understand other things, such as axioms, existence, consciousness, and identity. You should read that. So these five articles are important. I wrote them before I did this five-part series, because or else it would just be way too big. And apart from those five, there's words encrypting reality, power of definition, reality, unreality, magic, definitions, confusion, and chaos. Those four articles are in part three of this five-part series, so you don't need to read them there. But everything else is related, and it'll provide you with additional information and clarity into this presentation and into reality. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will work on part two next. And I guess you can wait for that. Thank you. Have a nice day. Take care. Peace.